Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 12:57 PM, that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 9th. Well, Jerome Powell is going to be speaking tomorrow, and the market has taken a bit of a breather ahead of what he's going to say. But I think we can pretty much anticipate what he is going to come out with, because when you look around at the data and it's simply think about what exactly is going on here, then there has been a significant transition or change in how the Federal Reserve is looking at its role. Over the course of the last decade, they have been very clear. They've been saying that they're data dependent. But that's no longer the case. What they're now doing is they're anticipating the data. And this takes the Federal Reserve into some very woolly territory, because when you're anticipating the data, you're attempting to predict the future. And obviously, that has two potential impacts. The first is that you change what the potential future might be by acting. The second is that you might be wrong, and then there are going to be unintended consequences. It is arguable whether this is going to be more positive or, in fact, negative for the economy, because historically, what the Federal Reserve has done was tighten too much, then wait for the data to deteriorate, and because of the lagged effect of monetary policy, they end up having to loosen policy even more than they had anticipated, and that creates the boom-bust cycle that we've been presented with for decades. By anticipating a deterioration in the data, they're going to attempt to forestall a slowdown. Quite whether they are in time to do that remains open to consideration. But what we can certainly see is when we look at the bond markets, then we've had a very significant compression in yields over the course of the last 3 months. There is a short-term oversold condition. I think it is quite likely that we are at least due some pause in consolidation in terms of the 10-year treasury price. I think investors probably did get a little bit ahead of themselves in pricing in the potential for a 50 basis point cut in July. I think it's much more likely we're going to get a 25 basis point cut, for the simple reason that the data just does not stack up to support a 50 basis point cut. The US economy is not contracting. We do have a partial, or at least part of the yield curve is inverted. Interestingly, it is the part that the Federal Reserve pays attention to, the difference between the 10-year and the 3-month. Generally speaking, the market has almost always looked at the 10-year minus 2-year. And when we do look at that spread, well, it's at 15 basis points. It has not yet inverted. It certainly has contracted, though, over the course of the last week. And when we look at that failed upside break, and now it is back testing the lower side of the range, well, then there is potential that it could break on the downside. Then we would be presented with an inverted yield curve. Then there would be no arguing about the likelihood or otherwise of a recession potentially next year. When we then think of from the Federal Reserve's perspective, well, they are probably going to go with an insurance cut. In other words, that they have they're going to admit that raising rates in December was probably a move too far, and that they're going to simply unwind that interest rate hike. I think that would be the best course of action, because they do risk scaring stock market investors. If they were to come out with a 50 basis point cut, people would be thinking that, golly, the economy must be worse off than we thought. Well, then we think about the S&P 500. It is pretty much unchanged in here today ahead of Jay Powell's testimony tomorrow. But the most important thing is that it has broken on the upside. It is at new all-time highs. It is pausing around this psychological 3,000 level. There has been a distinct absence of downward dynamics, and provided it is continuing to hold in the region of the trend mean, during any process of consolidation, then that should be rather positive. When we then think about what is in fact going on in terms of stock market action, well, the transportation index is not confirming on the upside. And that's, I think, a rather important point here, that we are significantly below the peaks put in January of last year and again towards the end of this year. And in fact, when we then think about the Nasdaq, for example, today, it was in positive territory. It's being led higher by some of the technology companies. But when we look at the leading decliners, well, American Airlines, United Airlines, and Marriott are three of the top five decliners in here today. And I think that's also rather important here. When we look at, for example, the chart of American Airlines. I've just got off an American Airlines flight yesterday and it wasn't full. This is a very clear downtrend, and there is a rivetingly consistent sequence of lower rally highs. It's going to have to at least break that in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. There is the potential that there is going to be some antitrust on the are imposed upon the airline sector because of price rigging. That's one of the reasons why prices are coming down. But of course, there is the additional point that it is the global economy is under pressure, and that's not especially great news for the airline sector. Then it's also worth highlighting that the largest share in the Dow Jones is Boeing, and with earnings starting to come through for this quarter, well, it's going to be interesting to see how does Boeing respond in terms of the loss of the 737 MAX and the fact that the index is right in the region of the upper side of its range. When we do look at the Boeing chart, it has pulled back in a reasonably dynamic manner, and that could potentially be a top or it could be a consolidation. Just how that turns out is, I think, going to be rather instructive for the outlook for the Dow Jones over the course of the next while. Boeing surged on the upside, then with with two planes being downed in the space of a month, then it gave up almost all of the advance. Now it's right in the region of the upper side of that range that persisted for nearly all of 2018. This is an important area where it needs to be able to demonstrate support. So this will be a very interesting level to watch. We've definitely seen that there's been a considerable loss of uptrend consistency, and a great deal of volatility has crept into the share as well. So it really does need to hold the lows if the benefit of the doubt is to be given to higher lateral arranging. And of course, when we think about the airline sector, well, they often decline in response to oil prices, but oil has not rallied by nearly as dynamic in as dynamic a manner as we saw in previous cycles. And we're certainly in a more volatile trading phase right now. Oil prices have been pretty steady though over the course of the last week. Where we are starting to see some interest coming back in is in the natural gas market, and particularly in Europe. We've seen a very pronounced decline in natural gas prices. Now we've seen the biggest rally since at least the beginning of April. Now the big question is whether the lows can hold. This has been a rivetingly consistent downtrend. And the fact that natural gas prices are so very low, and particularly against a background where there is ample supply and slowing economies, well, there is really quite considerable potential for a substitution to go on. And that's particularly the case in Europe, where there is still a lot of coal being burned for power stations. When we look at what's going on in Europe, well, we are still waiting on exactly what is going to happen in terms of monetary policy, and whether Christine Lagarde is the kind of person that's going to institute negative rates, or whether Mario Draghi will do it for her before he leaves office. The Euro stocks continues to hold this sequence of higher reaction lows. It's in the region of the peak from March. The most important thing it's done has bounced is to bounce from the region of the trend mean. This is, I think, one of the clearest points that Europe does tend to do well when it's got a weak currency. And the DAX index is at new recovery highs over the course of the last couple of days. The Greek index, having pulled back in a downside key reversal yesterday, followed through on the downside in here today. Well, that's a clear example of some buying the rumor and selling the news of the election result. That virtually ensures that we're going to get some reversion back towards the mean, and that could be a potentially quite a wide percentage move, considering that the price right now is at 840 and the trend mean is at 749. We're talking about a medium-term pullback that could still be a trending environment over the next, with a view to the next year. Then, when we think about what's going on in the Asia-Pacific region, Australia has been surging higher. Now, the ASX 200 does not have a great record of holding breakouts, so we are getting a little bit of consolidation going on right now. But I think the more important point is that the RBA is cutting interest rates, the government is engaged in fiscal stimulus, and they are attempting to support the property markets, and that is all helping to devalue the currency. The Aussie dollar had got right up to test the region of the trend mean, and it has failed. Well, part of the reason for that has been the renewed strength of the US dollar, but this still remains a reasonably consistent downtrend, and it is going to have to at least sustain a move above the trend mean to question potential for additional downside. When we then go ahead and look at the dollar index, it has bounced from the region of the trend mean. It is now coming back to test the sequence of lower rally highs evidenced since May. And considering the rebound that we've had and the short-term overbought condition that's evolved, well, that would suggest that there is at least some scope here for some pause and consolidation at the very minimum. A sustained move below 96 would break the choppy uptrend that's been underway now for almost a year. Then, when we think about gold, it has been considerably less volatile than the dollar index, and it bounced today from the lower side of this evolving range. This looks like a first step above the base. Well, a first step above the base can last for a few months, and it's only been going on for a few weeks. And it is a bit premature to conclude that the breakout is going to hold, although certainly it is looking rather impressive, having broken out and so far held the advance and holding around this $1,400 area. The hallmark of the base was the failure to sustain moves above $1,350. If it can do that during this pause and consolidation phase, then that will clearly demonstrate that we are back in a demand-dominated environment. When we think about the Gold Bugs Index, it has now clearly broken the 3-year sequence of lower rally highs. This, I think, clearly is beginning to suggest that gold shares have the potential to offer leverage to the gold price at this particular part of the cycle. We're not at a stage yet where they're going out and borrowing piles of money on the expectation that gold prices are going to be substantially higher than they are today, and that they have the ability to leverage their balance sheets. When that starts to happen, that's generally when the or well, let's not say generally, that is when the gold mining sector started to underperform the wider market for gold in the last cycle. It was in the early part of the cycle, while there was still a supply and elasticity meets rising demand element to the market, that gold miners did particularly well. And the fact that they are coming off such really quite depressed levels is, I think, rather encouraging. There aren't that many sectors out there any longer that are cheap, and the gold sector is certainly ticking that box, particularly relative to its peak. Well, the other sector that remains rather depressed is the industrial metals sector. And the London Metals Index has failed to rally. It's coming back down towards the lower side of its range. This is still a downward trending environment. There is a clear downward bias to the trend mean. It has encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean. It is now retesting its lows. Until we see more clear upward dynamics, then this remains a rather difficult environment for the commodities sector. The one exception has been iron ore. And the iron ore price has eased somewhat by some measures. What I find interesting is that when we look at the Qingdao iron ore fines chart, well, it hasn't pulled back by an awful lot, but at the same time, it is not updated all that often, or at least it's updated with a rather significant lag. The last time it was updated was the 5th of July. The Chinese Steel Union is attempting to lobby the government to try and arrest the advance in iron ore prices. That does represent a challenge for the bigger iron ore miners. And Rio Tinto pulled back rather sharply last week in response to that. This does, though, represent a supply and elasticity argument because we have the tailings dam disaster in Brazil, which and the response to it, which has been to become much more stringent in terms of regulation, and that has curtailed supply. And then you've had bad weather in Australia, which has also curtailed supply. And with fiscal stimulus, the Chinese are stimulating demand for iron ore and steel. The A-share index was again in negative territory in here today, and it is coming back down to test the region of the trend mean. Well, this is about where we can anticipate that the party will start to offer support to the market once more. The last thing they want is the kind of attention that a declining stock market would bring. They're trying their best to have put a brave face on the trade war and trying to demonstrate that there is a clear or that China is not experiencing too much trouble from it. But in order for that to be credible, then the stock market will at least have to hold at the region of the trend mean. And the renminbi is also pushing back towards this 6.9 area. The last thing the Chinese want is a strong currency, and they are certainly not willing to allow the renminbi to continue to appreciate, particularly when the dollar is going up as well. So they are certainly looking at how the renminbi is trading versus a basket of currencies. The last thing they want is a strong one. They have already had a knockback in terms of economic activity because of the trade war, and they need to try and preserve the outlook for the economy, and certainly a weak currency would help with that. Now, when we look at what's going on in India, the Nifty pulled back rather sharply over the last couple of days. It's now unwinding a good share of its overbought condition relative to the trend mean. The monsoon is well below the seasonal average at the moment, and it still has some time to run, but the monsoon rains are going to, I think, probably act as at least a partial headwind to the economy. The more that India's economy progresses, the less impact the monsoon will have to economic activity. But the water intensity of the economy also tends to increase with economic development, and that is a worry for India. Management of water resources is rather urgent, not least with what's going on in Chennai right now, and the drought that has taken hold there in the middle of the monsoon season, which is a rather odd set of circumstances. The more important point, though, is that the Nifty remains in a reasonably consistent advance, and as long as it is holding the region of the trend mean, then we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The additional point is that the rupee has been rather firm, and it is now coming back down to test its highs. The point, of course, is that the rupee is a has been one of the weakest currencies in the world over the last 30 or 40 years. The fact that it is now trading above its trend mean on a reasonably sustained basis is rather positive. When you get currency market and capital market appreciation with the benefit of yield, then that is the kind of activity that really starts to get the international community salivating at the prospect of emerging markets. So the strength of the rupee is a rather important point. The continued resilience of the banking sector is an additional sign to keep an eye on, because the BankEx has been one of the clearest lead indicators for the market. And when we think about lead indicators, well, the Topix banks, or excuse me, the Topix second section index has so far been encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. There has been a progression of lower rally highs evident since January of last year. It needs to push back above the 7,000 level in order to confirm a return to demand dominance. If the second section continues to trend downwards, then that is likely to represent a headwind for the Nikkei. And the Nikkei is also in the region of its trend mean. It needs to sustain a move above 22,000 in order to break that sequence of lower rally highs since the end of last year. The bigger point is, when we look at this very long-term chart, that the Nikkei has broken above 20,000. If it can hold this move above the 20,000 level, well, then we're still talking about a first step above the base. But it really does need to hold that 20,000 level. I think when we think, where are we, or I guess ask the question and attempt to answer, where are we in terms of this market cycle? The markets generally have concluded that we are at the top of the interest rate cycle, regardless of the fact that both Europe and Japan have been unable to raise rates, and that the most likely course of action is for lower rates from here. That suggests that the Federal Reserve is only beginning to lower rates, and that by anticipating the data, that there is really the scope for a bubble to occur. That's perhaps one of the unintended consequences of their actions. By anticipating the slowdown and starting to stimulate now, then they have the scope to create a misallocation of capital and then higher valuations. There is the additional point, and I've posted this chart in here today, but when we see periods in time when the majority or close to the majority of shares have a higher yield than the 10-year treasury, then that has generally represented an important low in the market. And we were at that point in 2011 and 12, we were at it again in 2015, and we were at it again in 2008. Well, if that alone were the only thing we look at, we would have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. As long as these breakouts to new highs are sustained, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. The underperformance of sectors that are leveraged to the outlook for the economy, and less so for the consumer, is a worry. It does suggest that we're getting a narrowing of focus. Again, that is representative of late in the cycle activity. But bubbles occur, in the latter parts of the cycle. So I do think that's something we need to be prepared for. And with that, I wish all the best to all of you.